So, I want to talk to you about a label. Labels matter. What we call ourselves, a liberal, a conservative, an orthodox, a conservative, they matter a great deal. Of course, they're situated differently. For example, a conservative Judaism in Canada looks quite different than it does in the United States. So context matters, but labels do matter. We try to eschew them sometimes as best as we can. We're post-modern orthodoxy, post-denominationalism, post-modernity. That's an effort to strip us of our labels, but invariably, by calling ourselves post, we somehow label ourselves, designated ourselves differently than what was, well, I guess, before a post, whatever. Take a look at source one, and you'll see what I mean in the context of modern orthodoxy. Rabbi Norman Lamb, who's going to figure in very prominently into our discussion, wrote the following in his collected writings in 2002. If the reader is perplexed by my use of the terms modern orthodoxy and centrist orthodoxy, he produced his essays, and he didn't change them much, and sometimes he called it modern orthodox, sometimes he called it centrist orthodox, the confusion is justified. The former term has been in use for some time, modern orthodox, to distinguish it from the Haredi or reclusive branch of orthodoxy. For a while, I rejected the title because I considered the adjective modern as objectionable. It appeared as if we were boasting of our modernity when, indeed, we were hardly uncritical of it, even though we stand for engaging it openly and forthrightly. I therefore introduced the term centrist orthodoxy, intending not a mathematical mean between two extremes, but those who follow Maimonides' principle of moderation. Of course, that's the Aristotelian golden mean. However, this did not prove to be an inspired decision. Most people assumed it meant we were situating ourselves midway between Reform and Satmar. Nothing, of course, could be more wrongheaded. I have therefore reverted to the term modern orthodox. Let's unpack that just a little bit. So Rabbi Norman Lamb, who becomes president of Yeshiva University in 1976, even before then, was the darling, the intellectual darling of the Orthodox Union, the Rabbinical Council of America in the 1950s and the 1960s. He's correct. He's not arrogant. He's correct. And he steered the process of labeling and relabeling. Modern was in vogue for a period. At a point in time, modern orthodoxy stood for modern foremost, and orthodoxy, maybe not even a secondarily, but tertiary sort of way. And so he changed it. He led a campaign to change it to centrist orthodoxy. Well, centrist orthodoxy, he says, quite provocatively, was some sort of a line graph, and you would situate yourself along the x-axis, and there was a spectrum, and modern or centrist orthodoxy meant you could plot yourself in between two different faiths, or two different groups of Jewish faith communities, and that also was mistaken. That implied that they were somehow less or more than other communities. When he didn't want to apply anything but less and more, he meant that we are centrist, that we are balanced. Whether you read it in Rambam's Mishneh Torah, or you read it in Aristotle, or a translation of Aristotle's works, the idea that you should do everything in a certain level with a modicum of moderation. You shouldn't be so exuberant, you shouldn't be so sad, you should be somewhere in the middle. It's a controlling our behaviors and emotion, and that's what he suggested was the purpose of centrist. That was not a very, what he says, inspired decision. So by the end of the 20th century, Rabbi Norman Lamb had Harata. He reconsidered and recalculated his decision. And so we started talking about modern orthodoxy. All of this explains how the reader picked up the two wrongs. But actually, the term modern orthodoxy was not was born in the late 1920s. What do I mean? It actually was coined, first time I've seen it, in the 1860s. But take a look Again, I'm going to be thumb through this packet to page 3. It's an archival document. This is the first page of an archival document from 1913. It has an underlined copy above it. There are more source sheets over here. Here's a letter from Rabbi Henry Pereira Mendez, the rabbi of the Spanish-Portuguese synagogue in New York, Sherith Israel. Now the rabbi is Rabbi Meir Soloveitchik. He's also the founder in 1898, of the Orthodox Union. He's a major organizational leader in American Orthodoxy at the turn of the 20th century. And writes Mendez to the leadership of a group that has really in the last decade reframed the purpose and the mission of another rabbinical seminary called the Jewish Theological Seminary. In 1902, the seminary was reorganized and brought in the leading scholar of Judaica at that time, somebody by the name of Dr. Solomon Schechter, somebody who didn't use the term conservative. He actually said, if I had to pick a designation, I guess you would have to call me Orthodox. He preferred terms like Catholic Israel, but he was rather ambivalent about these terminologies. And in truth, the nascent, what we call today a conservative movement, it wasn't quite yet the conservative movement. In fact, you had, in terms of if you're going to measure it based on Mechitza, for instance, there were JTS graduates who were stationed in synagogues that had Mechitza. There were some that did it, but then again, there were OU synagogues, many of them. Impossible to calculate the numbers and percentages. There were OU synagogues that had mechitzas, that didn't have mechitzas. This was what one of my teachers, Jeff Gurak, has called the period of fluidity that comes before the period of rigidity, to give you an understanding. So writes Mendez to the leadership of the Jewish Theological Seminary. Dr. Schechter and Rabbi Cohen have both had several, everybody see where I am? Had several interviews with me concerning the proposed Agudath Yeshurun, or Union for Promoting Traditional Judaism in America. You see, the seminary was considering to launch something called the United Synagogue. The United Synagogue, which exists to this day, is the congregational body of the conservative movement, in which its Orthodox analog would be the Orthodox Union. Right, they're both congregational bodies, not as opposed to, say, rabbinical schools or rabbinical groups. This would be the parallel. So Mendez gets word that there's a lot of discussion to establish a separate synagogue body for rabbis associated with the seminary, and Mendez has already started the conversation. I have carefully examined the preamble of the Constitution and the sketch of the Constitution sent to me. I understand that you are chairman of the Constitution Committee, and I therefore write to you. So he's already been in discussion with Solomon Schechter and others, and now he's coming to a younger but important and a pivotal figure in the establishment of the United Synagogue. In order to explain my views to you, let us for the moment agree to the following definitions. You can't make this stuff up, even if they are not exactly correct. But he wants to say, what exactly are we doing? I've established the Orthodox Union. They haven't yet gone into the kosher industry, so they're not really on solid footing quite yet. That would happen until the 1930s. You're starting this other group. Let's see if we can combine forces, says Rabbi Mendez to these young seminary leaders. First, who are these groups? Russian Orthodox. This is the orthodoxy which insists upon a certain ritual in certain forms, but objects to English sermons, has little or no decorum, he doesn't dominate such a show, fails to hold its young men and women, refuses in its schools Hebrew and religious education to girls, and cares little whether women and girls attend religious services or not. It's interesting, already in 1913, they're identifying the markers of denominationalism based on the engagement of women, which is really, really interesting. And then, of course, it also insists that such customs as the shaitel, and in a word, degrades womanhood as you and I understand. Uh-huh. really interesting. Second, modern orthodoxy. Here it is, in 1913, long before Rabbi Norman Lamb. As represented by, for example, you're in my congregation and several Ashkenaz congregations. Everybody wants to be modern. Everybody wants to be in the middle. Such as those in Baltimore, Philadelphia, and Montreal. This orthodoxy resists innovation such as organs, pews, meaning mixed pews, disuse of a talis, female voices in the choir, Christians in the choir, etc. And then it talks about conservative Judaism, but this term means that Judaism, which permits some of the innovations named. So it's adjunct to modern orthodoxy, but he refuses, in this context, to give it firmer designation and details. Then fourth, Reform Judaism, which he has no truck for, and then Radical Reform, which he thinks is a different religion. Okay. Turn back to the first page. So modern orthodoxy is viable. In fact, it's what the leadership, and in other places, Mendes makes clear, is the Orthodox Union is intending to do. It's something that resists innovation, but apparently doesn't insist on women wearing a head covering, and will not be so upset if they show up to shul or if they sit in their school. So that's a modern orthodoxy, according to Rabbi Mendes, but it's still an ambiguous and a contested term. So take a look at source two. A little bit later, Sam Zar, the head of rabbinic placement at Yeshiva University, writing a letter. Unfortunately, we don't have the letter to him. We have the letter by him to this community in Omaha, Nebraska. Please advise by wire what you mean by modern Orthodox congregation. So Omaha, Nebraska. I've been there. There's a terrific, the second greatest zoo in America is in Omaha, Nebraska. For a father, that's very important. Modern Orthodox congregation. What do you mean by modern Orthodox congregation? So Omaha, Nebraska said to Mr. Zar, can you please send us a rabbi from the Rabbi Isaac Kleinman Theological Seminary, the institution which would become Yeshiva University? We are a modern Orthodox congregation. Can you please send us a person who fits the description of our synagogue? Writes Rabbi Zar, Mr. Zar rather, to the folks in Omaha. Not so fast. First, tell us what you mean by modern Orthodox. Our graduates, while American-born modern in the fullest sense of the word, are, however, strictly Orthodox. Do you intend to have family pews in your synagogue? So I'm going to deputize all of us historians today. What can we glean? No, unfortunately, we do not have the letter to Tsar. What can you understand? What are the implications of what modern Orthodoxy means at this moment in 1928? Confusion. And what might it mean?
They speak English.
So Tsar says, you want somebody who can give a drasha in English rather than in Yiddish? I got somebody for you. But if you want somebody who...
It's basically what Russian Orthodoxy is not.
It's what...
The Russian Orthodoxy is not.
What do you mean?
It seems like that's how it's being defined. It's not all those negative things...
It's not all those negative things that Mendes had implied, but what it might be, what Tsar is concerned about, is that when you say modern orthodoxy, you're suggesting something other than strict orthodox, which is defined by mixed pews or family seating in a synagogue. So tell me a little more, because I don't want to foot the bill to send somebody all the way from New York to Omaha, Nebraska, only to find out that you have mixed pews. Now, there were Reed's graduates who occupied mixed pews, but here is somebody who's resisting that. Placement officers, and you know what? I got to first understand what you're doing, because our graduates are strict Orthodox. They don't do this mixed pew stuff, even if they did, but at least his position is such. So modern Orthodoxy, there's an ambiguity about what the term actually means. Doesn't mean that they're learned, that they're worldly, and can deliver a sermon in English, or does it mean that they're modern, that they're trying to create an egalitarianism within the sanctuary? It's unclear. It's possible. Meaning that some people's definition, my point in the source, is that it's far from clear when people use the nomenclature, the taxonomy of modern orthodoxy, what it means.
Is it YU?
Zar is working for YU. He's a leading administrator at the rabbinical school, and he's writing to the folks in Omaha, Nebraska, in the hinterland, saying, please give us clarification, because the symbol, the label of modern orthodoxy isn't enough for me to understand what you mean. Take a look. Yeah.
It's almost like the way we try to define God, not by what he is, but what he's not. Mm-hmm. So maybe we're trying to define modern orthodoxy.
And that's actually really important. That's really important. It's very difficult to start a movement if you're only describing what you're not doing, what you're the opposition. It's much easier to be a modernist than an anti-modernist. It's easier to stand for something, to be substantive. You're absolutely right. Yes? The issue really came to a head in the 1950s. It's a good question, certainly.
They didn't have technology then?
The microphone really... The technology,
the technology is still
we're working on it. But in the 1940s, 1950s, that's when the microphone really started. In the synagogues that were built in the late 19th century and the early 20th century were really state-of-the-art structures in which the acoustics really did much for it. It's really into the 1940s when the technology went... When the migration of more and more Jews and the movement to other spaces, that they needed to account for the volume issue and start using the microphone. But that technology really comes to play in the 1940s and 1950s. That and a contested criterion of that. Yes, absolutely. So, if you take a look at source three, you'll see that Rabbi Yekutiel Yehuda Greenwald also had his definition of modern orthodoxy, and he, a Hungarian-trained rabbi, wasn't much of a fan of the so-called modern orthodox rabbi in the pre-World War II era. What do I mean? Take a look. Take a look at the bolded section. Aval B'Yameinu. He's in Columbus, Ohio. Aval B'Yameinu. Ela yidabru b'shem orthodoxy moderni. I hear all these terms about the modern orthodox rabbi. V'harav shelahem hu orthodoxy moderni. Shakavana sharashut v'yado lishnot. His intentions are to change, to alter. Traditional-minded Jews are allergic to terms like change. Lishnot ligrova loosif, to detract and to add, kifi ruach hazman, modern means in the spirit of the times. Imrak shem orthodoxy olav, orthodoxy modernit. It's not just an orthodoxy, it has to be a modern orthodoxy. Mikol asher lo katuva betorei. It's a term that we don't find anywhere in the Bible. And then you look in the next, how can you tell, what are the indicators of a modern Orthodox rabbi? Says that I'm involved in the last bulletin section. Harav ha'otodoxi moderni yipatet be, what is that next word?
Spinoza.
And
Schopenhauer.
Right. And what is the next one? Uma'od. Uma'od ha'melchbariyam ke'ela. And all these authors, these modern European composers and authors, like Spinoza, the greatest, maybe first heretic in modern Jewish history. Zoti avodat Elohim Balil, Balil Shabbat. They talk about this in Friday, in late Friday night services, because in the winter time it was too early for people to come to shul, so they had these late night forums. Sometimes they had actual tefillah quite late, and there was much opposition to that. Some of them had these forums where they would teach, and they would have an oneg, what we call an oneg Shabbos. And that, my friends, is a modern Orthodox rabbi, according to this card-carrying member of the Agudas HaRabbanim. He has absolutely no tolerance. He has an allergy to this modern Orthodox rabbi. Another definition, as we move further in the post-war period in the 1960s, what is a modern Orthodox rabbi? This comes actually closer to approximating what we think. This is a Satmar, very interesting, I think, a Satmar Chassid, is Rabbi Uriel Zimmer. What does he say? In a book, it's, I think, the very first book on tznius that's targeting young girls, trying to implore them to adopt a certain level of modesty. And what does he mean? He's after much of it is about clothing, as you might expect, but here it's also about association and Jewish network. What is he saying? The bolded section in source 4. The mixed organization, so these youth groups, therefore, even if carrying no ideologically wrong banner, should definitely under all circumstances be avoided. Needless to say, in this connection, there is no difference between a nationwide or even worldwide organization and between a local, say, synagogue youth organization. Who is he going after? It was just founded in 1959 in earnest. And CSY is modern Orthodox. The modern Orthodox type, in its American edition, and its made in Israel equivalent, what is that probably? B'nai Akiva. Are equally wrong from the Torah viewpoint. He cannot actually, by the 1960s, though, identify what's wrong. It's not Spinoza. It's not mixed pews by the 1960s. But here is somebody from the Orthodox right trying to approximate a heresy by giving you an indicator, mostly based on coeducation. But it's a problem. It's a problem to use modern Orthodoxy by people who would otherwise identify as modern Orthodox. Take a look at source 5 and source 6. Writing in 1960, Rabbi Norman Lamb, recently relocated to New York to be associate rabbi of the Jewish Center in Manhattan, writes, there is nothing world-shaking about the problem of whether the name of authentic Judaism in our contemporary confused age be called Orthodox, traditional, or anything else. He's eschewing. He's demurring any designation. He doesn't want to be known as Orthodox modern. He wants to be known as Jewish. There is nothing particularly sacrosanct about the name Orthodox or any other such appellation. Ideally, our attitude should be that no adjective is the best adjective. Now, would he say that other Jews are actually Jews? He's also trying to push other people out. He's trying to own the word Jewish rather than even forget about modern Orthodox. He's not interested in the use of the term modern Orthodox. We are Jews. In our faith and practice of this Judaism, unqualified, uncompromised, undiluted. It's an ambitious notion. Once we agree to an adjective of any kind before the name Judaism, we have willy-nilly implied our assent to the co-validity of other interpretations of Judaism. So Rabbi Lamb's doing multiple things here. He is number one, he is trying to own Judaism, to say that other people who claim Judaism are not. So he's very aware of designations, but he doesn't want to use the term Orthodox Judaism by dint. Of saying I'm an Orthodox Jew, I am, in some sense, acknowledging that there are Judaisms, there's Jewishness, that is not an Orthodox Judaism, that is as a something else Judaism, say a conservative or reform. But he's very aware of this. And if you take a look by Rabbi Irving Yitz Greenberg in a letter to the editor also in 1966, one of the very first time that he was targeted, one of many, the modernist assumes that modern culture is normative, and that Torah must be cut to its measure. This is in source 6. I reject this and am a severe critic of modern culture. Take a look at the bold section. Here's Rabbi Yitz Greenberg. And of aspects of, in quotations, modern Orthodox, a term which I detest. So in the 1960s, everybody, from Rabbi Norman Lamb to Rabbi Yitz Greenberg, are afraid of the term modern Orthodoxy because it's freighted with baggage. It's like, l'mashal, speaking about Jewish identity. What does it mean to have Jewish identity? Well, Jewish identity means many things to different people, and they're all wonderful. So somebody who is very involved in a Israel lobbyist group might have an incredibly thick Jewish identity, which has nothing to do with synagogue or day school or ritual life. And for this man or woman, they have a very thick Jewish identity. And who's to say that you can remove that from them? Who should? For a conservative Jew, for an Orthodox, Jewish identity is a contested term. And in our time, in 2019, it's very hard to have a coherent conversation about what identity means. So same here in the 1960s. It's really difficult, given all of the past decades of baggage, about what exactly a modern Orthodox Jew ought to be and what it has been defined as, the people we would otherwise have expected to be the champions of a new era of modern Orthodoxy aren't that interested. But labels matter. So turn the page.
Not to the Bob Shirelli.
Not to the Bob Shirelli.
But he was alleged to have sent labels on the groceries.
Yes, but in a sense, and it's interesting, and there's much more to say, is that Chabad is perhaps maybe the most powerful label in North American Jewry. And in fact, we refer to Chabad sometimes separate from Orthodox, regardless of the messianism. But sometimes you'll hear people say, you ask me about Jewish geography, so what's going on in your shul, or your community rather? Oh, so we have five synagogues in our community, a conservative, we have a reform, we have two Orthodox, and we have a Chabad. And that's interesting. And labels do matter, despite what Lubavitch, and I've heard the same thing as well. Here's Rabbi Norman Lamb again in a sermon in his archives that are actually online, the Lamb Archives of Yeshiva University. We who are known, so this is by the late 60s, for better or for worse, so he's a little ambivalent still, as modern Orthodox. So he's owning it, tentatively, but he's owning it. Except as both an integral part of our Weltanschauung and as the basis for our community structure, the idea of uniting within ourselves two worlds. Brilliant writer. That of Judaism and that of the larger culture. The one that is expressed in Western civilization, its science and technology and humanity. So here is a positivistic, meaning it's offering substance of what a modern Orthodox Jew or a community ought to believe, and he's owning it, for better or for worse. He is owning modern Orthodoxy, and he's issuing substance. And perhaps by the late 1960s, people have forgotten. You don't have, a historian lecturing about what had come in the 1920s, 30s, and 40s. So, once upon a time, it could have been freighted with significant and problematic and equivocal baggage. But by the late 1960s, Rabbi Lamb, who only 8 years earlier had said, I'm a Jew, I'm not an Orthodox Jew, let alone a modern Orthodox Jew, he's starting to own it, but not everybody. But first, another Rabbi Lamb sermon, source 8, delivered about 6 months later. I even confess that I am uncomfortable with the title modern Orthodox. So he's hedging his bets a little. There is an arrogance about this assertion of modernity which should give offense. To any intelligent and sensitive man or woman. There is no better term that I have found, but I flinch when I articulate the words. So he doesn't know a better term, but he understands that labels do matter, that we need designation to be relevant, to have a conversation with one another. But not everybody, like I said. Well, at this point, I'm locked in.
But it would be better for the recording if you could.
Okay. Not everybody is so sanguine about modern Orthodoxy. Take a look at source 9. At the very moment that Rabbi Lamb is starting to become a little more comfortable with the term of this designation, this nomenclature, rightly or wrongly, says Rabbi Emanuel Rackman, who at that time was a formative modern Orthodox figure, maybe not. One Jewish sociologist, he's referring to the great and late Charles Liebman, has named me, says Rackman, as an ideologist. Interesting. His profession was as an ideologist. Of modern Orthodoxy. However, one can hardly regard modern Orthodoxy as a movement. It is no more than a coterie of a score of rabbis in America and in Israel whose interpretations of the tradition have won the approval of Orthodox intellectuals who are knowledgeable in both Judaism and Western civilization. None of the rabbis feels that he is articulating any position that cannot be supported by reference to authentic Jewish sources. None wants to organize a separate rabbinic body, and several have rejected an attempt to publish an independent periodical, because they do not want the remotest possibility that this form of separatism, a modern orthodoxy that's separate from other orthodoxy, be interpreted as a schism in orthodoxy. No less than they deny any claim to innovation. So here's Rabbi Rackman, the rabbi of a well-heeled congregation in Manhattan and the vice president of Yeshiva University, who would one day contend with Rabbi Lamb for the presidency about 6 years later, actually, saying, there are people who want to make me the head of this modern Orthodox movement. I'm here to tell you, he writes in the pages of Judaism, a very important journal at the time, I denounce any association with this thing, modern Orthodoxy. I reject its very existence. I am not its leader, certainly. Writes Rabbi Lamb at that exact precise moment in Source 10, writing an article called Modern Orthodoxy's Identity Crisis. An identity crisis that has much to do with everything that we've been discussing so far. The challenge to our intellectual leadership is clear: to formulate the worldview of modern Orthodoxy in a manner that is halakhically legitimate, philosophically persuasive, religiously inspiring, and personally convincing. It is a tall order, admittedly, but one which we must fill if the great centrist mass of American Orthodox Jews is not to be pulled apart in all directions as they stagnate in importance and inarticulateness for want of a clear worldview to which they can feel fully committed in good conscience. Here it is. Rabbi Norman Lamb, by the late 1960s, is saying, there is something called modern Orthodoxy, and darn it, I'm going to be its leader. Rackman says that he doesn't want it. I'm going to own it. Forget about what I wrote in 1960. Forget about my equivocation in the 1960s. We need something. We need definition. We need to be articulate. And so I'm going to tell you about our identity crisis, and I'm going to be the leader to help solve the issue. And people are noticing. In the Jewish Observer, Rosh Yeshiva tells in Chicago, we talk about Cleveland tells, but there's a Chicago tells, a branch of it, Rabbi Chaim Dov Keller, should live and be well, is noticing it. And he's writing, and he's noticing at this moment that it's Rackman and Lamb. And he's saying, when later says, and I kind of approve of what Lamb's doing. I'm kind of glad, he says, noting both articles, one in Jewish life and one in Judaism. I'm kind of glad that Rackman has denied a leadership or the existence of a modern Orthodoxy, and this more right-leaning Rabbi Norman Lamb is leading the charge. And in 1972, he talks about a modern Orthodox Judaism without any hesitation whatsoever in Source 12. But then something happens. Well, first, before we get to that, take a look at these sources. Fortunately, there's only so much time, but if you take a look at page 4, 5, and 6, you'll see this debate of a graduate of the Hebrew Theological College, where I work, in Chicago, in Skokie, Illinois, and one of its graduates has assumed a pulpit in Atlanta, Georgia, and has decided to basically accept the position because the laity would like him to move the congregation to mixed pews. It's Sherith Israel in Atlanta, Georgia. The longtime rabbi is Rabbi Tobias Geffen. Anybody know why Rabbi Geffen is crucially important for
Coca-Cola?
He was one of the first people not employed by Coca-Cola to know the secret recipe. Now, I think it's hechshered by the Orthodox Union. And nobody knows quite exactly who knows the secret recipe. Quick note, a lesson in how things happen in history. Rabbi Geffen was able to convince a vice president named Cohn to give him access to the secret recipe because other people were drinking Coca-Cola despite the fact that it wasn't kosher. There was glycerin that was a part of the ingredients. He actually writes a tshuva where he tells you exactly what the ingredients are. That's held in his papers in the American Jewish Historical Society. The recipe there, I haven't seen it, is fully laid out. When it's published in Rabbi Geffen's tshuvot, in his responsa, he uses codes, he uses symbols rather than letters. But apparently, if you go to the American Jewish Historical Society, you too can know the secret of Coca-Cola. Why Rabbi Geffen was given access to the secret recipe is because Rabbi Geffen had a brilliant daughter who would become valedictorian of her public high school in Atlanta, and Vice President Cohn had a daughter struggling with trigonometry. And so little Miss Geffen was tutoring little Miss Cohn in math, in 11th grade math, in cosine and tangent, and because of that relationship, Rabbi Geffen was able to leverage and gain access to Coca-Cola. Interesting how things happen. But a Talmud Chacham in his own right, certainly. What happened? In this particular case, we have the successor is a rabbi named Sidney Mossman, who has agreed, in a time in which many congregations, in fact, are going to litigation, are suing to change or to maintain mixed pews in the name of orthodoxy. And obviously, the Rabbinical Council of America and the Orthodox Union by the 1950s is rather angered by this movement. And while it's happened in three locations, principally in Louisiana, in Ohio, and Michigan, it's gone to state Supreme Court, actually. It's about to happen in Atlanta, Georgia, as well. And the RCA, on page 4, Rabbi Israel Klavan writes to Rabbi Fassman, who is the president of the Chicago Rabbinical School, saying, please help us. One of your musmachim is going to convert a congregation into a conservative synagogue. You turn the page, dear Sidney. Rabbi Fassman implores his young friend to resist the temptation. And then in page 6, after Mossman has not responded to Fassman, he writes, I am surprised, this is 1958, that I have not heard from you in reply to my last letter. So it's been, this is May 9th, the previous letter from Rabbi Fassman was April 28th. So some time has gone by. Don't yet have email, of course. That I have not heard from you in reply to my last letter. Meanwhile, the Rabbinical Council of America has called me from New York to join with the council in helping to preserve the tradition in your synagogue. As you can readily understand, the yeshiva, or in Chicago we call it the yeshiva, will cooperate with the Rabbinical Council of America. So he must say, Sid, this is dear Sid, I'm not going to have your back on this one. Since, why? It is the official spokesman, is the RCA, for all the modern Orthodox group in the country. So again, the use and the reemergence of a term modern Orthodoxy, what we're calling the invention or the reinvention of modern orthodoxies in the 50s and in the 60s. Yes?
Is the Sephardic community at all involved, like, with the nuances, the titles?
That's interesting. It's only really recently that Sephardic congregations have started to enter into the Ashkenazic taxonomy of American Judaism. Their tradition, their minhag, has reigned supreme. That's a really interesting question, and what's happening now has echoes of this, of these interesting things, particularly in Los Angeles, actually. It's a good question, but I don't think so. That's not my sense. If you take a look on page 2, again, the last two sources. Fast forward to the 1980s. Although RCA members, in Source 13, Rabbi Gilbert Klapperman, the president of the Rabbinical Council of America, although RCA members like to consider themselves as centrists, we are being drawn to the right by the adamant inflexibility of those who are at the right. We are intimidated by the right. We react to events and ideologies around us, but frequently lack the courage to initiate because of the fear that we may be challenged by our brethren on the right. Why, for example, if I daven daily Shabbos Yom Tov and Yom Narayim in a yarmulke, must I put on a black hat to officiate at a wedding with other rabbis who are thus attired? We do not have to collapse into miserable surrender. He wouldn't be president for much longer. Because someone who claims, actually he's going away speech, greater piety favors a certain form of dress. There is a tyranny in self-declared piety that is objectionable as the scorn of the left. So number one, the conversation is happening internally to Orthodoxy, right? Modern Orthodoxy is a useful term in the 1960s to differentiate not just between a so-called Orthodox piety, but really to describe an amenable form of Orthodoxy that is separate from conservative Judaism. Here, he's using the term centrist orthodoxy, which Rabbi Lamb would really promote and spearhead in the 1980s, but he's no longer speaking about qualitative terms like modern. Instead, he's using terms which you can plot on a graph, left, right, or in your view, right, left, and center. And these terms are serving a new purpose. What do you think about this? What's happening here? Why change the centrist? Yes?
It seems to me he's not so concerned with conservative anymore. He's more concerned about within the Orthodox world.
And why is modern more helpful than centrist? Mm-hmm. Why would he think? What's the Havamina, so to speak? Mm-hmm. That centrist Orthodoxy could be more useful in this discussion, in this conversation, than a modern Orthodoxy. It means that it's freighted, it's defined by the same terms. Its definition is the same. But now it's a centrist Orthodoxy, which is part of the taxonomy, it's part of the vocabulary, not a modern Orthodoxy. Yes?
Feeling a challenge from the right.
So in order to speak to the right, and rather vociferously about the right, we are in the center. And instead of talking about a modern Orthodoxy, which is unintelligible in a conversation about that with the left and the right, what exactly does a modern mean? To enter into that conversation because they feel under siege by the Olam HaYeshivas. Again, rightly or wrongly, it's not our business. But a word center positions itself. And it's empowered, is it not? To a certain extent. Although, as we began our discussion, maybe not. Take a look, though. Here is the principal document. In 1986, Rabbi Norman Lamb offers an explanation of centrist Orthodoxy. We seem to be suffering from a terminological identity crisis, right? He published an article in 1969 about modern Orthodoxy's identity crisis. He still wants to be its leader, but he's reconsidering the terminologies, or we might call the taxonomy. We now call ourselves, so this is not the first time he's introducing the term. We now call ourselves centrist Orthodoxy. There was a time, not too long ago, when we referred to ourselves as modern Orthodox. But it's been a long time, it's been ages, since Rabbi Lamb has tried to call himself just Jewish. Others tell us that we should call ourselves simply Orthodox, without any qualifiers, and leave it to the other Orthodox groups to conjure up adjectives for themselves, right? Some people say, Rabbi Lamb, you were right the first time. Just call yourself Orthodox. Let other people use the ukimta, so to speak, the qualifications to say, well, we're this type of Orthodoxy, but you, Rabbi Lamb, you, Yeshiva University, you, Rabbinical Council of America, you just be Orthodox. I agree with the last view in principle, but shall defer to the advocates of central Orthodoxy, the advocates being himself, for two reasons. First, it is a waste of intellectual effort and precious time to argue about titles when there are so many truly significant issues that clamor for our attention. In no way should the choice of one adjective over the other be invested with any substantive significance or assumed to be a signal of ideological position. So what's happened? What has happened? We've started from 1913, and now we're in 1986. What's happening with the term modern Orthodoxy? More importantly, what's happened with the embrace of labeling and designation in this space? Because in many ways, it's not the people who have changed, but it's the labels that have been transformed over a period of time. What do you think? What do we think? Yes?
Modern has a tremendous weight associated with it. It implies progressive. It implies movement in Western culture to a certain ideological stance. That's a rejection of things of the past. That's what modern.
Right, so modern has implications, and in Rabbi Yitz Greenberg in the 1960s, severe implications that he would rather not be a part of, and that's Rabbi Greenberg. Modern has certain implications, and so does centrist, of course. And for various epochs in North American Jewish history, they have different levels of currency and abilities to connect to certain conversations and, in their view, win the day. And while modern Orthodoxy meant something in the 1920s to a rabbinic placement officer at Yeshiva University, it meant something different to Rabbi Lamb by the late 1960s, 1970s, what we see is that in America, in North America, where there isn't a poll tax any longer, we do not have to identify ourselves or assign ourselves with our nation in terms of our religious identification. Right? There was one point, in fact, really up until the 19th century, when Jews had to register with their local municipality, with their local country, and say, this is what I am. And with Rabbi Samson Raphael Hirsch, who sued to establish something called an Orthodox or a separatist community, now you could register as something different than just Jewish. You could identify with his Gemeinde, with his community. So labels did matter, so much so that your citizenship was tied to it. But in the new world, whether we're talking about America or Canada, we don't register. We have to register with our political affiliation. But in terms of our religious identification, we don't have to assign ourselves in any way. And that makes perhaps, kind of counterintuitively, that much more important in this 20th century for religious leaders, because there still is a marketplace of religious ideas. There are still rabbis and leaders and lay people who are competing for our attention, for our dollars, and for the places in which we sit on a Saturday morning. Labels do matter. They matter a great deal. And each one carries a different level of currency. And for some, they matter in a certain way. And later, well, I can't affiliate with a modern Orthodox because of what it's meant historically over a period of time. At other epochs, by the 1960s, 1970s, modern Orthodoxy has stood for positive, constructive, I mean, not positive in terms of good, that's not my business here. But Rabbi Lamb is offering what modern Orthodoxy ought to be. Well, it only takes 20 years to abandon that position and say, you know what? A different term matters. The lesson here, I think, is that the more and more we try to escape from designation in the modern world or in our postmodern world, labels do matter. We try to run away from them. And rightfully so. Rightfully so. We try to run away from terms that unfairly define us, but in a modern age, in an emancipated world, where we each are our own sovereign selves, labels help define community. And in a world in which we badly and so dearly need community, these labels are one level of agency to start talking wholesomely about our community. The challenge is that when we make our labels, we start to define ourselves, sometimes inclusively, but sometimes separately from other people. So paradoxically then, the lesson of modern Orthodoxy is be careful how you label yourself. Thank you so much.